From Inner Systems, it's the Healthy Data Podcast. I'm Jordan Cooper. To learn more about this and other episodes, please visit podcast.healthydata.com.
Hey, with Rob Adamson. He is the CIO and EVP of Robert Wood Johnson Barnabas Health. For those who don't know, RWJ Barnabas Health is a health system based in West Orange, New Jersey, with 4,500 beds, 11,000 providers, and 19 hospitals, and is New Jersey's largest private employer with 33,000 employees. Rob, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me. Good to see you again, Jordan.
So for our most ardent listeners to Healthy Data Podcast, you may recall that Rob looks a little familiar. He was last on Healthy Data Podcast exactly 3 years ago in June 2023, season one, episode 38. And so a lot has happened since then. Rob, you completed your Epic conversion from Allscripts, Cerner, and Meditech, correct?
We are all done, thankfully.
So many of our listeners are still in the midst of doing that or have recent traumatic memories of that. Lots of budget there. Last time 3 years ago, you were going strong with Siesta Fiesta. How has that been continuing?
So we still do some version of that, and we tie that to basically where upgrades are going to be or something substantial so that we don't allow people off when we desperately need them, but at the same time, give them the latitude to enjoy all their paid time off.
So for our listeners, that's just about blocking time and ensuring that there's time on and time off, and we try to separate the two at Robert Wood Johnson. Anyways, let's get down to it. Today, our conversation is going to be what happens when you stop treating IT as a support function and start treating it instead as a strategic partner. There's a campaign at Robert Wood Johnson Barnabas Health called the Driving Early Awareness and Partnership for Innovation campaign. So before we jump into the mechanics of all this, do you want to give an overview of the campaign?
Yeah, sure. So one of the things we did is when I took over as CIO, I asked a very simple question to my coworkers in our IT executive council. I said, I want you to look at every meeting that you attend, all of you collectively, and I want to see, is it early awareness, mid awareness, or late awareness in the strategy? And what we actually found when we did this is in 2023, 70% of the things that we attended was late in the cycle, late awareness. Mm-hmm. A little bit on the mid awareness, and then 10% was early awareness. We feel advocacy is an offensive sport. And I said, let's go out there and let's get rid of the things that are late awareness and get ourselves on those things that are early awareness. And in 2026, that same group, 80% of all the meetings we attend now are strategic and are early awareness, and only about 5% is left at late awareness. And you may say to yourself, go ahead.
Okay, so no, keep going. So you may say to yourself, and then...
Yeah, so what I was going to say is you may say to yourself, what does that actually mean? So as an example, in 2022... we were on two early awareness councils, the chief medical officer, the chief nursing officer. Now in 2026, I'm a member of the board of trustees, the CEO's executive leadership team. We're on the construction and space planning, the COO council, mergers and acquisitions, quality and patient safety. Very, very different complement of what we're on. And why is that important? Because when a goal, a strategy, or an initiative is being started, who's at the table? IT. What was happening is we would be informed of something, and nobody on this call is going to ever remember something like this, but just go with me. Hey, we're opening up a building and we need a network spun up by Monday.
Yeah.
Even though you've been planning this project for a year and a half. So early awareness gets you away from reaction to proaction. And that's when we became not a division, but a service line that is thought of the same as cardiovascular, oncology, and the like.
I can't tell you how many of our listeners are often are asked to go through fire drills that are preventable, and two, are asked for a Band-Aid solution that in reality doesn't address the root business cause and use case that you need to solve for, which just leads to a new request for a new solution a few months down the road, and it keeps going until somebody does the root cause analysis. So before we go deeper into exactly what you've been doing the past few years, in this early awareness and partnership campaign, I'd like to bookend this conversation with a thought that I'm then going to mention again at the end of this conversation. So, and that thought is about measurable clinical impact. Ostensibly, IDNs, integrated delivery networks, or large healthcare delivery systems, are all about, yes, they're businesses. Yes, you need to be in the black instead of the red, but ostensibly you're there to deliver healthcare in order to improve health outcomes for patients. Sometimes you're managing at a population level. A lot of times you're managing at an individual level. And so I just want to bookend the conversation like with why we're doing this. What are the implications of having the IT team separated from the business owners, the service line owners? And I just want to ask you to speak for a moment about where you started in terms of your inpatient mortality index. And then we're going to go through the awareness, the strategic IT governance, the executive share goals, and then the impact of all of those mechanisms, those tactics, on the strategy of having where you ended up with measurable clinical impact. So would you please guide us through that that journey, Rob?
Yeah, sure. So I think you talked about shared goals, which I think is the secret sauce to get to the clinical measurable outcomes. If you take a look in 2022, 9% of all of our executive goals were shared with some business, operational, or clinical owner. In 2026, as well as 2025, every single executive in IT has a corresponding shared executive goal with an owner. The one you're referring to is a project that we're incredibly excited about, and it's called the Auto Clinical Documentation Improvement Scenario. And essentially what this is we know when a patient comes into our facilities, there's something called the mortality index. And what that basically means is if your mortality index is one, that means if you came in and you actually succumbed to your disease, that was expected. A one means it's expected. If it's 1.3, that means 30% of people are dying more than we expected. And then if it's less than one, less people are succumbing to disease than we expected. And what we found was we were doing amazing clinical care, but some of the problem we had was documentation in nature, and that we were underappreciating how sick our patients were. So the AutoCDI program, when launched, which is an AI platform, gets launched into Epic. It actually goes and finds about 15 to 16 different diagnoses, as well as things that are already in the chart, surfaces them for our clinicians to say, oh my goodness, I forgot to document these things. They get documented, and now we're getting credit for people and how sick they really are. Now, so what happened was, is
just to jump in there, you say surfaces information that clinicians forgot to document, but of course you can't service information that doesn't exist in digital format. So are you talking about discrete data elements as opposed to unstructured text?
So for instance, I'll give you a very clear example. We know when someone's potassium level is very, very high or very, very low, this could have a major detriment to people's mortality. And so it's in a lab. We see it's high, but nobody wrote it in the actual note. Somebody forgot to document it. It's all there. It just never got documented. Now it gets surfaced so that it becomes part of the note, so that when you go through this, it goes into the overall index. And what's wonderful is we were starting at 1.25, meaning 25% more of our patients look like they were actually succumbing to disease when they shouldn't have. And in fact, now we're down to a 0.6, which means it's 40% less likely you're going to succumb and have mortality. And it's because we're actually doing two things: the amazing clinical workflows that are being done by our clinicians, and at the same time, making sure that we're appreciating just how sick our patients are.
So before we get into how you accomplish that, and that's going to be very exciting, just to understand the number between 1.25 and 0.6, I can think of at least two ways that you might explain that. One, the care being delivered is better. More information is being available at the right time to the right person to make better informed decisions. Right. Or maybe it never really was 1.25. Maybe it was closer to like 1.0 or 1.1, but now you're better able to capture the accurate clinical diagnosis. Can you speak about the different explanations for how to interpret the first where you started?
Yeah, that's a very sage observation. So the idea here is just think of it as your numerator and your denominator. Mm-hmm. And so the numerator is how many people succumb to the disease. That obviously doesn't change. You either were alive or you weren't. That's pretty straightforward. And what you're referring to is making sure the denominator is correct, mm-hmm. which is how sick really are you? And so what we did is clean up the bottom as well as the remarkable job on the top. And when you put them both together, you're right. It's probably maybe a little exaggerated at 1.25. Nonetheless, what we saw is an accurate representation. And now what we see ourselves is we're now a top quartile health system in the United States.
Now, I think that will capture the attention of a lot of our listeners. I think everybody already knows the answer, but would you mind explaining what the financial implications are to the business of being in a top quartile? Very brief.
So what's interesting is the reason I'm not going to do that is because we don't actually talk about that. What we talk about in our health system is the quality of care, mm-hmm. and then the patient experience. Now, there is going to be financial benefit to obviously documenting more and those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. I will tell you that the back of the napkin math is mm-hmm. is in the tens of millions of dollars, like $40 to $80 million mm-hmm. in additional revenue that goes out. Now, what we actually get paid is a little bit different, and I don't want to go into the specifics because then it's kind of, hey, how'd you get that arrangement with your commercial payer? But the idea is that at least we know it's been an uplift in terms of the revenue in a large magnitude.
Right. So basically what you're saying is there's a bunch of programs to have a measurable clinical impact on more closely integrating IT leadership with the rest of the business lines. So and there's financial impact, there's improvement in patient experience and quality of care. So let's dive into exactly how to get there. Now that we're convinced that there's a pathway to get where we want to go, you said, first of all, about the meetings. The meetings need to be early awareness instead of late awareness. I think our listeners may be interested, how do you designate early, late? And then more importantly, once you designate and have a standard definition, how did you change those meetings? A lot of times how do you cancel meetings? Everybody has too many meetings that they can't extricate themselves from. How did you do that?
So I wanted everybody to do what I call I said, let's do hygiene for your calendars. Tell me what would happen if you don't show up to this meeting. Explain to me what horrible event would happen if you don't come to this meeting. And 90% of the time I got, I nothing. Correct. So then why are you going? I've always been going. Okay. Then I said, where do you think you should be? And they were very, very articulate in why they should be at these other meetings. They couldn't give me a good reason for staying at the meeting that they were currently having on their on their calendar. The way we actually define it was early awareness is simply IT is engaged before the strategy, the decision is actually made. You get to shape it. On the other hand, mid-awareness is the direction is largely set. They bring us in the end and then say, hey, why don't you give this a look? So there's at least something, but all that does is it basically preserves value, doesn't create any. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, late awareness, there's a risk, a cost, rework, all of that's done because we're woefully too late. Mm-hmm. And so I said, let's categorize all our meetings along those lines, because if, again, early awareness happens, this is where advantage actually gets created if you're part of the strategy up front. As an aside, the way you take those meetings now and then operationalize this to get great outcomes is mm-hmm. those shared goals. And I'm talking about incentive goals, not mm-hmm. just a goal. Can you imagine your IT leader having the exact incentive goal as your business owner, your chief medical officer, your chief nursing officer? Those are the kinds of people who have a shared goal with, let's say, our chief medical information officer or CNIO, or in my case, I have shared goals with business owners. Mm-hmm. So such that you definitely align, it's shared, and the same person we all report to approves the goals to be cascaded amongst two and three different people that we all share them together. Suddenly, you can unlock lots of things because you can't work in a silo. It's not in your best interest.
So I think I mean, it makes a lot of sense from a common sense perspective, but obviously, if this is something that is new and novel, then it didn't make enough common sense for it to just already exist and not require this intervention. What have been some of the challenges to getting the CFO and the COO on the same page as the CIO? Are they're used to thinking about doing something on their own, maybe having more independence? What kind of pushback is there? Oh, if we involve IT, it'll slow us down. What kind of objections did you encounter, and then how did you overcome those objections?
Yeah, so the strategy around that was knowing that I was not at the right table to advocate for myself and then advocate for the colleagues that I represent. Mm-hmm. And so the challenges that I first overcame was IT is woefully too slow, you take too long, things never get done on time, so on and so forth. So what we did was I took three or four projects, mm-hmm. superimposed when everybody else knew about all of it and when we were brought in. And I said to them, it's interesting that this 14-month project, all of you had 14 months and we were given 4 weeks. And mm-hmm. I was just wondering, why did everybody else get so much more time to actually do this? And you're telling me we're a major dependency and we had the least amount of time. And no one said a word, and they looked at me and said, wait, I got another one. And I did the next project and then the next project. And they said, well, maybe you need to be right at the table when we're making these decisions. And I said, yes, I do. So they said, well, why don't you start joining the COO council? I said, sounds good to me. Hey, you should be a member of the board of directors. Sounds good to me. Mm-hmm. And so by educating them that, listen, I'm not throwing aspersions at everyone, but if it's a 12-month project and you're giving me 2 weeks to do it and everybody else gets 52 weeks, how do you expect us to not do the same kind of quality and checks that you all had because you were afforded a different level of opportunity? And so educating people with cold hard facts and pictures work, and you basically show them a picture of here's everybody else's timeline, and you see that little thing at the end there? That was our timeline, and you're telling me we had the most complicated part of all of this.
Was it difficult to do discovery on when other C-suite executives first had knowledge about a project? I'm sure, did you have to go through their admins? How did you know about that if you didn't know about that?
So I have good relationships with my colleagues. I just said, when did you get aware of this? He goes, well, we started talking about this last May. I'm like, oh, when was that? He goes, I don't know, first, second week in May. Good enough. I found out about it in April, the following year. Not good. And so we had this discussion and he says, that doesn't seem fair. I said, no. And he goes, you know, you're a critical part of this. I said, you don't say. I'll have to look out for that. And so I would, you know, just have a good conversation with my colleagues. And at that point, I think Epic also helped when we rolled out Epic and they saw just the value of being on the front end. I leaned into that and said, now let's take Epic as a microcosm of all the things we do in this health system.
So I think you've spoken a lot about awareness transformation. You spoke about getting on the same page with these other executives. Now, how do you align your goals in the IT stack, the CIO vertical, with the rest of the organization?
So the rest of the organization has a strategic plan and strategic priorities. What we did in our IT group is I said, guys, it's always going to be ever changing. So let's simplify what we need to do as an IT team. So perhaps maybe, you know, Jordan, another call maybe one day is how we organize the strategic plan of IT into four words. And those four words are real simple. And we brought that back to them, which was organizational enablement, organizational resiliency, and modernization was the other one. Mm-hmm. And so I said, and then people, and then customer experience. And when you think about that, everything we do lumps right into those four things. And so as they were getting facile of what they were trying to do as an initiative, we could become very organized because we had a very simple four words that we can, or four themes that we can tuck you in under. And that made us much more nimble. The same thing is true as we brought back what we wanted back to the board of directors or back to the COO council or brought back to the right C-suites to say, here are the things we're thinking of doing. And then we did a reconciliation of those.
So in terms of defining incentive goals, I think some of our listeners may be listening to this episode and thinking, how do I replicate Rob's success at my IDN in the Midwest, the South, the West Coast? When you say incentive goals, can you define them more clearly and concretely? Because I'm sure there are many KPIs on everybody's dashboard. Which incentives are you aligning?
So it could be something as simple as the overall budget to the health system, the overall budget, you know, in your department. Mm-hmm. One of my shared goals with the CEO of our medical group, as an example, is to increase the referral footprint with our joint venture partners, increase the referrals within our own group because we have friction in some of the workflows. And by working together, we would then say, we want to increase referrals by X. Mm-hmm. And so that as the CEO, he's going to see that benefit. As the CIO, I'm going to enable that benefit. And so we do those goals together. Another one is looking at our labs, our lab operator. We were able to shave $5 million out of labs we just didn't need, or we were ordering them too frequently. Well, the vice president over our clinical service line was with the senior vice president of the lab service line, and both of these ladies shared that goal, and both of them shared the exact same goal for their incentive program. So it's those kinds of things where they're trying to do an efficiency that they're doing on the front end or the workflow, but in the end, you can't do anything unless it's been built, enabled, and tested in the IT system, whatever that system may happen to be.
So we're approaching the end of this podcast episode, and there's still one more important bookend part that we need to address. So we've addressed... We started with the measurable clinical impact, talked about awareness transformation, aligning incentives, executive share goals. We spoke a little bit about the strategic plan and strategy, making sure that you're at the right table at the right time and getting out of meetings you're not supposed to be on. Now we're at the end of this journey. We've implemented all these interventions. You're driving the mortality index down to 0.6, meaning 40% better than expected when they presented at the hospital. Thoughts on where you are now and exactly how aligning all these incentives, perhaps with one quick little anecdote about how these changes led to that 0.6 score.
So these changes, and so I don't want it to seem like IT drove this whole thing. IT was just one of those groups that did this together. However, mm-hmm. having said that, if I just enabled something in IT and nothing changed on the clinical side, maybe the numbers would have been marginally better. Mm-hmm. If the clinical team did something, but we didn't enable things on the documentation side, maybe it would draw marginally better. What this is we think of this as a shared responsibility and that everybody owns this. One of the great things about the health system is in the last several years, everybody in the C-suite mm-hmm. Has a cadre of about 9 goals that are pre-prescribed to us that we all have to get behind. And one of them is mortality. So everybody who has a C in front of his or her name has the exact same goal of mortality. So we all share that as one large group because clearly takes a village. And mm-hmm. so what we did is help expedite things from a technology standpoint, but everybody leaned in to do this.
Yeah, you can't improve what you can't measure. You got to measure it, and an incentive drives behavior, and leadership drives the behavior of their team. So I really do appreciate your time with us today, Rob. Any final parting words, perhaps to yourself, 2 years ago, after our first podcast, but before you started implementing all of these changes, any kind of suggestions to a Rob from 2024?
So you have a lot of ideas, and always make sure you have patience, because whatever you do in a large group like this is going to take time, and you can't measure it on a daily basis. You have to make sure you do check in periodically, but just know that there's a great expression that says 10 pounds of constant pressure will eventually move the Queen Mary. And so the idea is it has to be constant, always be vigilant, but always make sure you have the level of patience to watch things mature over time and don't get discouraged.
I appreciate that, Rob. For our listeners, again, this has been Rob Adamson, the CIO of Robert Wood Johnson Barnabas Health, discussing IT being treated as a strategic partner instead of a support function. Rob, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Jordan. Pleasure.
From InterSystems, this has been the Healthy Data Podcast. I'm Jordan Cooper. Thank you for listening.